Who is Flotsam and who is Jetsam?
Oh, that's easy. Tom is obviously Flotsam. He's top billing. Think of Flotsam, large font, bold print, and then in very light Comic Sans at the bottom is Jetsam, and that's me. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You know, considering the the etymology of the words, I don't know that. So I've been I'm floating in the ocean while you've been thrown overboard, Amy. I don't know that that's the case.
Well, it is, because nobody would lose you on purpose, Tom Timmerman, but I am expendable and they would toss me overboard right away. So I think it's absolutely appropriate.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. I am joined this week by two hockey folk, Post-Dispatch sports writer, one of the Blues beat writers, Tom Timmerman, and for the first time on the best podcast in baseball, it's my pleasure to welcome KMOX's Amy Markscores. Thank you both for joining me here. How are you guys holding up? Amy, how are you doing in this time of no hockey and quarantine coverage?
I know. Well, I'm doing okay. Now that I'm with the Charlie Brennan show, I feel like we've been, you know, maybe even working more than ever because the headlines are changing every hour. So we've had a lot of COVID-19 coverage, but it's interesting because in some way you have a lot of this gravitas and just very somber topics. And then at the other side of things, currently I'm sitting in a fort that I made out of blankets and chairs, and I'm in my bedroom and eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So it's that, you know, it's that strange dichotomy that we have.
And Tom, how about you? How are you adjusting to life not on the road?
Yeah, we should have had a Blues playoff game either Wednesday or Thursday night of this week, and that's it's weird. It's very weird, and trying to stay busy. I'm embarking on all sorts of adventurous stories that I never would have dreamed writing, but I certainly did not envision writing at this time of year. And it's where also, there's more people around the house, and I've got a daughter taking, engineering courses and a wife teaching courses. So it's a lot going on here around the Timmerman household.
Are you able to help with the engineering courses, Tom?
I cannot help at all with the engineering courses. There's like some heat dynamics classes and it's just nothing. I mean, we're talking third year mechanical engineering stuff, and I am hopeless on this. There's no way. I mean, I listened to her talking with her classmates, and it's like, nope, this is a world that I do not move in.
Tom and Amy host a show on KMOX called Flotsam and Jetsam, and I know Tom very well. We've covered hockey together for 3 years, and I've known him longer than that. Back when I was a student at Mizzou working for the Post-Dispatch, Tom was one of the guys who I got to talk to on the phone to hear how awful my copy was. And
Never once was said.
That's not true at all. It's okay. You can be honest. It's all right. But the Flotsam and Jetsam just fits into Tom's personality that I know so well. And we'll have some. I'm going to try to capture the spirit of your all's show. I'm going to do my best, because basically I have Flotsam and Jetsam envy at this point. But we do need to talk about the sports landscape as well, particularly where the Venn diagram of hockey and baseball are meeting right now. Are you guys bracing yourselves? Should hockey fans brace themselves for not seeing hockey again in the 2019-2020 season?
I think so. I think there's an excellent chance because certainly in some communities, they may not allow activities until sometime into the fall. And while Gary Bettman has said, they can play hockey into August or September, there's got to be a line somewhere. And while you could say, okay, we won't play games in San Jose, but I think they're just the complexities involved with having everything that could happen. There's a lot. And until I think until a vaccine is developed, I think it's going to be tough to have games, just because it just takes one person testing positive, and then you got to shut everything down again. So I think it's going to be really, really hard to do. Now, I could be wrong, or maybe the vaccine comes out more quickly than thought. But boy, it's going to be tough to check all the boxes that you would need to check to allow teams to play.
Yeah, there's just too much that we don't know. I mean, when you really think about it, you know, if you're looking at the number of cases in the United States, the numbers that we have just because of our limited testing so far could be orders of magnitude off. And what does that mean for the quote unquote exit strategy, both in the economy and regarding sports? How do you get out of this current stasis? And I have prepared myself for no more of the 2019-2020 season. I just think logistically, I don't know how you pull it together for the reasons Tom brought up. But then also when you look at the players, at what point is it dangerous for the players to try to pick up at playoff level hockey after months off? It doesn't make sense to me.
Does that mean, Amy, that the Blues, after more than five decades of waiting for the cup, are but they keep possession of the cup for 2 years? I mean, how would that work? It would just be an empty part of the ledger, and they'd have had they'd be the defending cup champs when the season comes back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it would work, but I don't imagine them counting the 2019-2020 season as the Blues as the Stanley Cup champions. I almost look at it as if it's a hole. It's just a hole. There's a vacuum there. If we go to hockeyreference.com years from now, there's just going to be a vacuum that there was no Stanley Cup champion in the 2019-2020 season.
Which is a lot like 94 in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's the year on the cup from the lost lockout year where it just says I forget if it's no champion, no season, but there's a blank spot, you know, on the Stanley Cup from that entirely lost season that the NHL had. And I don't know that you can say, you know, you can't give it to Boston because they had the most points. I think you just have to, you can give Boston the President's Cup. You can President's Trophy. They can get that. But as far as the Stanley Cup, yeah, you know, with the playoffs, and they talked about an expanded playoffs, but I think if you're going to have a playoffs, you need to get down to a small number as quickly as you can, because if you've got 16 teams, 20 teams playing, that's, you know, 20 times 30 guys, 600 guys that could test positive. I think you need to get down to two or four teams really fast if you are going to play it, because that minimizes your chances of a positive test somewhere along the way. You can't, you know, the 2 month long playoff that we've gotten used to with the NHL, that just can't happen. I mean, it's got to be a really streamlined playoff.
Yeah, but if you think of that, though, I mean, if you were to streamline the National Hockey League playoffs, that fundamentally and radically alters the nature of that playoff. Because I would argue that it is the length of the playoffs that determines, in many ways, who the champion is. Like, does the final, if the Blues play the Bruins in round two, do we get the same outcome? I'm not so sure.
That those both hit on topics that dovetail nicely into the situation presented by the Cardinals and to Major League Baseball, more specifically, is this idea of, do they fundamentally change the game to get it going? And also what Tom is talking about there, about how the more players you have involved, the more possibility there is of a positive test. And before we get to that, I want to tell people about our sponsor. Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% off plus an additional 15% off. That's Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. The official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Now, both of you no doubt heard about the report or read the report from ESPN and heard about Major League Baseball discussing the possibility of baseball in the bubble of Arizona, however you want to describe it, basically isolating itself, pulling itself out of from the 30 cities and putting all of the teams in one for some kind of controlled start to the season. What was your kind of initial view of that, Amy, as you kind of read through it and read through the proposal that would start the season as quickly as possible, but perhaps, as kind of you mentioned about hockey, fundamentally change the game?
Right. I mean, my first thought is, did Kurt Vonnegut write this? I was like, wait a minute. Maybe Ray Bradbury. Like, there was this strange dystopian feel to the whole thing. I mean, I think there are two ways to look at it. And initially, I get it. I mean, America loves baseball. It's such an integral part of our identity. And baseball needs to make money. So I get that you want to bring baseball back. But logistically, the bubble seems a little simplistic, because it's one thing to say, well, baseball players are spread out on the field. But what about, getting everybody there? Hotels, buses, meals, locker rooms, much less collisions at home plate. I just think there are so many question marks with this proposal that I appreciate why they are talking about it. But logistically, it just seems impossible to me. And I will say this, and the second side of it, let's say they were able to manage it logistically. I can't tell if it would be better or worse to have baseball separated from the country and played in empty stadiums, because I think more than any other sport, the crowd, the ambiance, the fact that we're all there is such a key component of baseball. I mean, the sport is so protracted. It moves along at a leisurely pace that sometimes it feels like you're watching the fans just as much as you're watching the play. And I'm not sure if it would be kind of a prick to seem to hurt the national selfhood to say, this is who we are, but you're not part of it right now.
Yeah, that's the part that I struggle with, is the notion that baseball is defined by community. And you talked about it on this podcast before, this notion of, like, if you play the game with empty stands, is that a violation of baseball's history in the sense that it's defined by people being there and it's part of, say, the community identity, whether it's minor league baseball or major league baseball, but it's part of bringing the community together. And then the other part of it, does it send off a false note of normalcy? Mm-hmm. Does playing baseball when, take the extreme example, does playing baseball in Arizona when people in Chicago can't go visit grandma and grandpa, or people in St. Louis can't go to a park, does that send the wrong message, Tom?
Well, but if crowds are essential to baseball, then how do we explain the Marlins?
Wow.
Oh, I love it. Derek, Tom Timmerman has a nickname, and it's Shady Tom T. Because
he casts shade?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's new. That's a new twist. I'm glad I didn't cover hockey with that Tom Timmerman. Man.
I pick my spots.
That was pretty strong, Tom.
I think in our quest for normalcy, I think people wouldn't mind. Now, it might be harder to get people to stay indoors if they're watching baseball games on TV. But, we just need something new in our lives. So I think there would be some benefits to that. Though I think, as we talked about, I think the logistics of doing it just are staggering, and it just would be too complicated to pull off, to have all these players in Arizona for however many months. But I think in some ways though, it would be welcome, just that, hey, look, I can, it's something new in my life that's going on. There's a baseball game, whether there's fans or not. And maybe I'm wrong in that. I mean, it's weird. I was expecting that I was going to be watching hockey games this year without any fans. I thought we'd be sitting in the press box at Enterprise Center in an empty building, watching the Blues play the Ottawa Senators with nobody there. Right. And that was in that 3-day golden period where we went from, gee, maybe there'll be no fans, to, oh, there's nothing going on at all. I mean, it was amazing how quickly that happened.
There was a 12 minute. There was a 12-hour span, part of which I spent at the dentist office, where I was convinced that I was going to go to Roger Dean Stadium and watch a spring training game with no fans, and that at some point in time in that game, baseball will be like, this does not feel right, and cancel the whole thing. And it didn't quite play out that way. And one of the reasons why I felt that is because Florida was clamping down. The governor, who was late to act in a lot of ways, said that he did not want events with crowds of more than 250. And yet then there were like six baseball games that day, a few hours after he said that, that had thousands of people at them. And we were watching one. And I was like, this can't be right. Where's your line though, Tom, in the sense of if the game comes back and the fans aren't there, that's one change, but where's the line as far as the integrity of the game? If they change rules, are you cool with that? If they change playoff structure, are you cool with that? If they do a March Madness single elimination in baseball, are you cool with that? I mean, where's your line for how baseball should return?
Well, single elimination, I would say that baseball, not a sport that lends itself to that. But as far, I think we have to view this as a truly, unique and bizarre time in the nation's and the sport's history. And if we say we're going to stick to the rules that we have stuck by for, what year are we up to in baseball? 150, 140 something right now. If we say that's the only way we can do it, then I think we're doing ourselves a disservice. I think we have to say, if we're going to play seven inning doubleheaders, if we're going to, put a guy on second base to keep game shorter, I think we have to say these are strange times. And I think in history, we will look back and say those were strange times and they did strange things to play the games, but they played the games. And if the health conditions allow, but you have to make some modifications, I'm not going to say that spoils the integrity of the game, because I think we're going to be able to look back and we're going to say the 2020 season was a different time in this sport's history. And I think we can look at it that way.
Amy, where's the line for you? Like you said, hockey's championship is somewhat definitely defined by just the arduous marathon of the playoff schedule. Baseball is defined by its ubiquity. It's there every day, and it too has a marathon aspect to it, where a team that has the best record after 162 survives and plays on. It'd be a little weird if the playoffs were longer in baseball than the regular season. Where's the line for you?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a tough one, and I guess it depends on how big will that asterisk be if you take extraordinary measures during an extraordinary time. For instance, let's say they did something super bizarre with hockey, that it was single elimination, or it was just an incredibly shortened playoffs with, just a handful of teams. I don't know that you can, in good faith, inscribe the winning team's name on the Stanley Cup, right? I mean, that's the most hallowed trophy in sports. So you could play the playoffs, but is that asterisk big enough that you say, listen, we're going to have hockey, but this is an outlier and it's not, their names aren't even going to go on the Stanley Cup. So then with baseball, do you look at baseball and say, listen, we have to do something extraordinary, where you almost don't even view it as a Major League Baseball season? You would view it as Major League Baseball players playing in a tournament. It would almost feel like a special pandemic year tournament. I think that would have to be decided by Major League Baseball. Would the fans rather see that than a regular season? I'm not sure. Or say you pretend it is a regular season and you have playoffs and you're calling it Major League Baseball. Are those the World Series champions?
That's a great question. So Tom, answer it.
I was trying to think. Yeah, how big was the asterisk that we used on the Santana no hitter? Didn't we have a large asterisk in the paper?
It's one of the few stories that I have written that I have framed and in my office. Like, I'm not one to collect that stuff, I guess. But I do. I have that one because on the front page it has Johan Santana, and it's awesome. Carlos Aiello did the design, and it says no hitter, and then a substantial asterisk. Yes, it is. It's a reasonable size asterisk. It's probably smaller than the asterisk used by perhaps your hometown when it comes to describing the Houston Astros World Series championship. Correct? How big is the asterisk in your heart for the Dodgers, Tom, in 2017?
That would be an asterisk. If it was 16-year-old Tom Timmerman around at that time, around now, it would be painted on the front of my house size. As I've aged, it's shrunk a little. I was trying to think of some example that came to mind on this, but yeah, if you said, look, we're not going to have a regular baseball season, we're not going to have a regular hockey season, but we're going to crown a champion for the sake of crowning a champion, and we're going to have a tournament, wherever it's going to be. And people look back and said, that team won the 2020 NHL hockey tournament, but it's not the Stanley Cup final. That might be how we look at it. As to whether you inscribe their names on the cup, maybe you don't do that. How few games can baseball get by with? If they only have a 60 game season or something, we would have to look at the championship differently, and maybe we should look at it just as this was something that we did to keep the country occupied during a time in which people were trapped in their houses for months on end. So
we don't look at the 1995 World Series differently, do we? I mean, I don't think of that champion as different than the Yankees in 96.
Well, and if you feel that way, and you are you're a baseball guy. So if you don't, I mean, I don't. So there you have it. I mean, that may be how we.
As a champ, I mean, Braves won in 95, right? That was a shortened season. It wasn't a shortened postseason, so maybe that's part of it. The Braves beat Cleveland. But you think back to the 80s where there's the split season. I mean, do you think of that champion as different?
Well, in Montreal, they do, for sure.
Well, fair. Absolutely. That's a great point. In Montreal, they do multiple times. That's a great point.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the asterisk, Tom, because I bet you could see that asterisk from space, which of course then puts a whole new meaning on the phrase "Houston, we have a problem," and that would be one of the things I want to remember when we're out of this pandemic. I just want people, don't forget to hate the Astros. Like, I'm afraid like that the Astros are somehow benefiting, and I'm like, don't forget to hate the Astros.
Where does that come from, Amy? Where does your stick-to-itiveness on well, quote unquote hating the Astros come from?
Well, I'm not a quitter, when I commit to something, I'm an equal opportunity hater, and I just think it's important not to forget to hate the Astros.
That just seems to come from a place that you are already bent against the Astros, or is it just like a hard, firm line against cheating?
I have no patience for cheaters, for sure. And so I think that's key. The whole nature of it was so unpalatable, and you feel like, yeah. I know baseball has, an interesting history when it comes to asterisks, but if you break the sacred code, there's a certain code that you just don't want to break. And for some reason, this felt over the top for me.
We have three time zones represented here in the sense of where we grew up. Tom grew up in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles area, steeped in Dodger lore. I grew up in a time zone that didn't have a Major League Baseball team. And Amy grew up here in St. Louis. Amy, your fondness for hockey in a town that has a deep, rich fondness for baseball, how did that develop? Mm-hmm.
I know. And not only that, but I loved all sports, but we were kind of the baseball soccer family. I was a huge Rams fan, and I'm talking Rich Brooks, Tony Banks Rams fan, like when they first got here. And then okay. I was
You have Rams street cred. Well done.
I mean, oh yeah. I was 12 years old when Gretzky came to the Blues. And that's when I started really watching hockey. And I absolutely fell in love with it. And it's funny because so many people are homeschooling right now. Well, I was homeschooled from second grade on. So I'm a first grade dropout. And because I homeschooled, when I was talking about hockey to my parents at the dinner table and reading the hockey news and all sorts of reference books, my mom, I think probably as part of self-preservation, said, you know, why don't you start writing about hockey? Write your essays about hockey. And they would bring me to the Blues practices out in Chesterfield. When really, I think it was just the media was there. They didn't have the huge crowds like they had today. And I'd walk right up to Al MacInnis, Mark Bergevin, Joel Quenneville, Pavel Demitra, Tony Twist, Kelly Chase, all those guys, and would interview them for my little newsletter that I wrote. You know, I was 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. And yeah, and that's when I just fell head over heels in love with hockey. And that's when I started playing hockey as well.
So you would have been there just before Tom and I started on the beat then together. Is that right? Am I doing the math right?
I think so. I mean, 1996?
Yeah, so he and I started 2001. My first day at the paper covering the Blues was September 6th, 2001.
That's right. Yeah, and I was probably getting ready to graduate from high school by that time. I wasn't hanging out at the practices as much. So I just missed you guys, but I was there. And what's funny is I used to play in a men's league that skated at 7 a.m., so here I was, 16 years old, I'd play in a men's league, take off my skates, and then run to the rink in full equipment and interview the Blues, like, after just having played hockey myself.
That's awesome.
Which is, it's so bizarre. They must have thought I was the weirdest person. I mean, I was in full equipment interviewing them. And in fact, one time the Oilers were practicing there, and I was in my full equipment, I'm watching the practice, and the coach of the Oilers is like, they were finishing up. He's like, want to come out? Want to come out and skate with us? So it was pretty amazing. I had some
cool, that is amazing.
Yeah. I had some cool run-ins. You know, the Avalanche were there and I chatted with Patrick Waugh. And I mean, just as a kid.
Could he hear you? Could he hear you through the rings in his ears?
Yeah, no kidding. I think so. He opened the door. You know, I had my.
Oh, wow.
He opened the door for me. So.
Wow. That was the first team I got to cover. The first hockey team I got to cover was the Colorado Avalanche when they had Ray Bourque and Rob Blake and Peter Forsberg and all of it. And, you know, this was, I was at the Rocky Mountain News, the dearly departed Rocky Mountain News, but covering the playoffs. And that was my first experience covering hockey. And then a few months after that, I was sitting down for lunch with Tom Timmerman and our editor. And plotting out how we're going to cover the Blues, I was upside down, but learned to appreciate the game quickly. How incredible is this then that like the interest and the career that your mom helped kind of nourish there at such a young age, you get to do?
It was surreal. I mean, I found my eighth grade yearbook. And in it, it says, Amy's dream is to one day be a Blues hockey announcer. It didn't say Blues broadcaster. For some reason, I wrote a Blues hockey announcer. And so when I, last year, the past 3 years, got to do pre and post game and intermissions on KMOX for the Blues, it was just a surreal moment. The 14-year-old in me was freaking out. And it was a long, circuitous route to get there. You know, I did everything but hockey to get to that point. So it was a huge dream. And also so many things came full circle because I was on the ice at TD Garden after the Blues won. And I see Al MacInnis, who was one of the very first interviews with my hockey newsletter, which was a 30-page, single-spaced Word document monthly newsletter, which I gave to Al MacInnis every month. And so that he humored me. And the fact that I got to see him there. Earlier in the season, I was reunited with Mark Bergevin, now the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. I said, Mr. Bergevin, I don't know if you remember me, but 20 years ago, I used to sit in full equipment and watch your practices and then interview you guys. And that was awesome. We chatted for 20 minutes.
That's great. My one of my favorite hockey stories I got to do, Tom knows this, is go to Port Hood and spend some time there with MacInnis and his family. And that meant going to... actually seeing him parade through town, with the gold medal. That's the reason why I went, is because he was going back with the gold medal, the Olympic gold medal, and then, go to the harness racing, races with him. And then be invited over for lobster dinner with the McInnesses. And I have like a photo of Al, you know, holding up the lobsters to me, like what he was about to cook. It was
wow.
it was a kind of experience where it was just a good story to chase and a part of the world that I'm glad I got to go to at a time I got to go to. And yeah, hockey was really rewarding. You know, the timing of it is interesting because, as you said, like Wayne Gretzky shows up. Tom, what team did Gretzky come from?
Could it have been the Los Angeles Kings?
Okay, yeah. Okay, so the Los Angeles Kings. Thanks for the reminder. So Gretzky comes to St. Louis, and that's also about the time that baseball has the strike. And how did that play? Did that at all, Amy, play into hockey over baseball for you? Because part of that time that you described there, there wasn't a baseball. There was a labor stoppage.
Right. No, that's a great point. Do you know, I think I fell so head over heels in love with hockey that it would have been the same outcome whether there was the labor stoppage or not. Like, I was just that tunnel vision. I mean, you know, you could kind of see it with hating the Astros. Like, once I zero in on something, I mean, it's all I see.
I think that there's like an example there. Like, Tom, you were when the baseball strike happened. Tom, where were you?
Where was I?
94.
Well, I was in St. Louis then. I came to St. Louis in I was still in Los Angeles. No, yeah, that's right. I was in Los Angeles because I came here in 96.
Okay, yeah, I was a student in college when it happened, and wore like a black armband because I was silly the next day to class. But I wonder how much like that influences baseball today. Like, and I'll offer an example. We all know that like labor, hockey has lost a season because of labor. There's been labor friction there in the past as well, and they were willing to shut it down for an entire season, as you guys described earlier. And really, that season, when they shut it down, is part of the reason why I moved over to baseball, because there wasn't hockey to cover. And there was a really good Cardinal team for the Post-Dispatch to cover. So hockey had its work stoppage and has had to claw its way back and has done a really good job to do so. Baseball probably can't ever escape how difficult that was to come back from a year that didn't have a World Series. And while I think the discussions where this Arizona bubble came out of shows that they really cannot afford, and I mean that in the truest terms, they can't afford to have a lost season. Just financially, it would be a lot for players and particularly for teams and also for minor league teams that may never open up again. But I wonder if like there's a PR element too, where they saw what happened when they didn't have a World Series and they want to scramble to have any sort of World Series at all just to avoid what happened in 94 and that big hole, whether it's the hole in, because I'm sure like you found, Amy, you found a fondness in hockey, and like you said, probably would have happened anyway, but I'm sure there are people your age that baseball lost and lost for good.
Right.
And Tom, same with you when you like in professional, like, I mean, you recall what that was like probably in a sports department to all of a sudden not have baseball and to maybe be reminded how much people cared about other sports.
Yeah, I think at the time I was the deputy sports editor at the Los Angeles Daily News at the time. And it was in Los Angeles, it was easier than in St. Louis because there's so much other stuff going on that you can fill the section. But still, it's a challenging time as to what you because you get this enthusiasm and this excitement and then, no, it's going to be, and it's baseball season. And then it's not. And it's same with hockey, that this is the time. This is the hockey's glory time with the playoffs. It's, a lot of people can ignore the NHL in December and January and February, but good gosh, April comes around and it's destination television watching, games, and every playoff game is on somewhere. And it's a great time. And that's why I think people say, look, the NHL season's not going to happen. They're going to wait as long as they can. And especially when you look at the ramifications, especially in hockey, what it's, you know, the salary cap next year is going to be affected by this. And that's going to affect, you know, can the Blues re-sign Alex Pietrangelo? I mean, there are so many issues that come along with this as to what, how it all plays out, that they've got to try to get everything they can to get this season, you know, finished.
It's, and I think to that point, the Blues are in an especially interesting position because, you know, people have kind of joked, well, they're still they're the reigning Stanley Cup champions. But I think if you step back a bit, nobody thought that St. Louis hockey would get the momentum it did with such a bang. I mean, you go back to the Winter Classic, then you go to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and not only did they win the Stanley Cup, but the manner in which they won it from worst to first, and Gloria,
right.
And Layla, every
point.
Aspect of that story. Binnington, right, larger than life. Then you have the All-Star game. And I've said, I am a big fan of spectacle because spectacle grows the sport and makes fans. I mean, Wayne Gretzky coming to St. Louis was a spectacle, and that changed the trajectory of my life. I mean, I started playing, you know, it determined my career. And so you have the Blues, I think, with a bigger wave of momentum than anyone could have ever anticipated. And you're just on cloud nine, and then boom, you hit a wall that nobody saw coming. So it's like being on a racetrack and you're on the straightaway at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway going 220 miles an hour thinking this is the best thing ever. And then you just hit a wall. And I don't know how many franchises have had that experience that the Blues have right now.
Tom, from a Dodger, former Dodger fan, what do I call you? Former Dodger fan?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, they had some ownership changes there that made it difficult to really get excited about them.
Yeah, that O'Malley one really got you, didn't it?
Yeah, well, that one I was okay with. Some of the subsequent ones, maybe not quite the enthusiasm for.
I'm joking. Well, what Amy was talking about there was spectacle. I mean, that fits the dot. I mean, this is – so the All-Star game was coming to Dodger Stadium this year, and I was – I mean, this season – on a personal note for me, I was looking forward to it unlike any other, maybe. You had just like so many of the things that I adore about baseball, or that I never thought possible in baseball, were going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Cardinals were going to play the Cubs in London. I remember going to school outside of London, trying to find box scores that were 3 days old because I was such a baseball fan. I felt so detached from it. My parents have a photo. Actually, I just found it here recently of me when I came back from school. So I got long beetle hair and crazy look. But I'm going through the box scores that they collected for me so I could see how like teams did that I couldn't keep up with. And here was a season where I was going to get to go cover a game in London or an All-Star game, like Amy mentioned, spectacle, an All-Star game in L.A. Tom, at Dodger Stadium. I mean, that's one of the most beautiful views in all of baseball, and you'd have the best players there. And then I wanted to ask, this is why I bring it up, is because not only that, but you were going to have, what's the term in soccer, Tom? Galacticos? Is that right?
Yeah.
What?
You were going to have a Galacticos lineup at Dodger Stadium. The Dodgers were going to be the Galacticos, right?
They got every baseball player known to mankind. So, yes.
Yeah. Wait, is that a Flotsam Jetsam Galacticos?
No,
did I hit on one?
It needs to be because I've never heard of it. But what it does, it sounds like it monitors your blood sugar levels. But what?
Tom, would you like to take it away?
No, it's like clubs like Barcelona or Real Madrid that have stockpiled.
Okay, I love that.
Stockpiled massive amounts of talent have been referred to as Galacticos.
They spend frequently, so they get the best players in the galaxy, Galacticos, right? Okay, so they spend the dollars, an absurd amount of dollars, a galactic amount of dollars to make it happen. And so Real Madrid is probably the most famous, is that right?
Yeah.
Or would Arsenal be one?
I think the Spanish teams have done it, have plunged in more because it's a bit more spread out with the Premier League teams.
All right. Well, regardless, we can all agree the Dodgers would be, they're trying to Galacticos it.
You know, the last time, I believe it was the last time there was an all-star game at Dodger Stadium. And I think they've had one in the interim, but I was there for that, sitting in the general admission in the upper deck with, really? I believe Tony Tennille singing the national anthem.
Oh, cool. Wait, without captain?
Without the captain. No, she did it. She soloed it. And
the captain?
You know, she was singing. There was no keyboard accompaniment.
Tom, they said love would keep them together. Where was the captain?
He was probably waiting for her backstage or in some box. And I think that may also have been a game where they shot off fireworks before the game, and it set the hillside in back of the ballpark on fire. And there was a small brush fire that broke out. I think that was the All-Star game where that happened. And I had a great view of it from the general admission level.
So all kidding aside, the Dodgers go and get Mookie Betts. And it's a real question because of an agreement with the union. You know, players will get service time when they won't get salary. And so it means if there's no 2020 season, it's possible that Mookie Betts will have been a Dodger but never actually played for the Dodgers. And that brings up a whole question about whether or not his name goes on the wall that says once a Dodger, always a Dodger. Does he belong there? He never had an at-bat as a Dodger if he leaves.
Played as many games as I did with the Dodgers.
Correct. Yeah. Well, I wrote your name on that wall. I hope you don't mind. Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Because I thought I got to write my name inside of Fenway, inside the Green Monster. I thought it's only fair that, you know, Tom Timmerman had his name somewhere at Dodger Stadium.
Where did you write your name on the green wall?
On the Green Monster?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Also, a flotsam jetsam. I'm very excited by this. So, on the inside of and Tom's been there with me.
Yes.
On the inside of the Green Monster, there is obviously the backside of the actual Green Monster, and then there's the concrete kind of support for the ballpark, and there's where the people who run the hand operated scoreboard sit during the game and listen to the game and watch the game and all that. Well, for decades, for generations, ball players will go in there and sign their names on the wall and when they were there. And you can be invited to go inside the wall to see inside it and sign your name. And so I was once invited to go in there and sign my name.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing.
That is amazing. You know, when you run the Boston Marathon, I guess this is every year.
Yes, my wife did that.
Yeah, they open up Fenway Park and you get to go in and walk around the field and see the Green Monster. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went there with my wife and my son when she ran it several years ago. And it's one of my favorite photos that I have of me and my son is us in the press box in behind it. And I got to tell them that story. I got to share that with my son, who'd never been there to Fenway. Tom and I have been to Fenway multiple times together, as it turns out.
Multiple times. And one time freezing to death out in right field, and then later on and more comfortable once we graduated to the press box.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we had a very memorable meeting with Peter Gammons as we walked in from the right field pavilion. We also, one of my favorite photos, Amy, that I have of my colleagues is of Tom Timmerman and the late Brian Burwell and our sports editor, Roger Hensley, standing in front of the Green Monster. The three of them together. It's one of my favorite photos that I have. I took it,
I was looking at that just the other day.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this is 2004. So before we all carried a computer in our pocket, I stopped to take that photo. But Tom, so where do you, as a recovering Dodger fan, where do you see this then? Like, so 17, we know about your driveway sized asterisk or, you know, great wall sized asterisk, because you can see the space. In 2018, they lost, and I recently came upon my score sheets from the 2018 World Series. They lost to the Red Sox, who, as, like Amy has reminded us about the Astros, let's not forget the Red Sox are still under investigation for sign stealing.
Yeah,
that cost their manager that job. So that team, the 2018 Sox, are still under investigation. And then now this year, as the Dodgers fortify to take a run at that elusive World Series title and do so with two MVPs in their lineup, not just two like former MVPs, but two really recent MVPs, and they'll be denied or be shoved into some kind of playoff format. We don't know. How should a Dodger fan look at this?
Well, I think clearly that the world is out to get the Dodgers. I think that's the only way to look at it, that for some reason they have taken the world has taken upon itself to deny the Dodgers and their loyal rabid fan base, the chance for happiness. And because let me say, in defense of, for years, Dodger fans have taken flack for leaving the ballpark early and that they are not as dedicated as other fans, which is hogwash. You know, it's just a reality that you can see the parking lot from the press box at Dodger Stadium. So you can tell people are leaving. Many ballparks, you can't do that. So you can't tell. Obviously, Los Angeles, a different world. Traffic, intensely bad. There's ample reason. But boy, a lot of people come to Dodger games. They fill that place every year pretty darn well. I think, you know, Dodger fans don't get the credit that they deserve.
So you're saying it's not fair to say that whether they win or lose, the Dodger fans will be there for them if they win.
Yes, but you know what? I think if you look back at Dodger attendance, yeah, I don't think you see tremendous dips when they've had bad teams or not good teams. I mean, they get 3 million. Every year they come, the fans come. So
there's an argument that they need a star, though, Tom. Isn't that? I mean, yeah. When they're down, that they had charismatic star players. Isn't that part of the argument?
Star or an asterisk?
Oh no, like a real star, like a Galactico star. Okay. Yeah. No, like a star player, like a charismatic. Whether that player is actually good or just funny on camera.
Yeah, I mean I think that goes in almost every Los Angeles sport, and whether it's Beckham with the Galaxy or Gretzky with the Kings. I mean, the Kings weren't making a whole lot of headway, and then Gretzky came there, and the sport took off. So yeah, I think all of the teams have been like that. That may be something, the Rams right now. Do the Rams have a person that fans go nuts about? I don't know that they do. They have good players, but is there that resonant personality that that drives things? Certainly the Chargers don't.
Amy, as someone who grew up in St. Louis during a time when the Cardinals went without a championship like the Dodgers are going through now, only I guess the Cardinals were really in a valley there. Where does baseball fit in for you? And what's your relationship been like with the game?
Yeah. it's as a St. Louisan, I know it's in my DNA. You know what I mean? Like whether I wanted it to be there or not, it's part of my DNA. So the Cardinals are part of, in the same way that baseball is part of our national identity, the Cardinals are part of my civic selfhood. And my dad was a big baseball guy. And I grew up in, playing baseball in the front yard, not softball, but we played baseball. And I've always said, an American should know how to throw two things, a punch and a baseball. Like, I just think that's the American way. And as far as your teen years, I think whatever happens in your teen years leaves perhaps the deepest indelible impression on some of, the things that mean the most to you. For instance, I was 15 years old when Pierre Turgeon scored the triple overtime goal in game 7 against the Coyotes. And he's always been my favorite player. So with the 90s, it was interesting for me because the Cardinals weren't winning championships, but you had Mark McGwire. And I remember my summers were always listening to KMOX baseball, the Cardinals on the radio, on the deck, outside in the yard. But when McGwire and Sosa had that race, I mean, you could be at the store and you'd find a television. You'd walk by a Best Buy. You'd find a bar to see when McGwire was coming up the bat. And I think that might be one of the clearest baseball memories that I have is that race and how, we scheduled our lives around those games.
Wow. That's awesome. Like appointment viewing. Almost like people describe football, right?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
You talk about being a things happen as you're a teenager. I was a little past being a teenager, but Ozzie Smith's home run, every time it shows the ballpark, that resonates in an entirely different way for me.
Oh, as crazy folks, Homer.
Yeah. I mean, I was livid at that. I mean, yeah, go crazy. I was going to strangle somebody. Yes. I mean, it was one of the low points of my life.
Yeah.
When that happened, you know, and then, you know, the home run, the Clark home run. I mean, that, you know, Pedro Guerrero slamming his glove. That spoke for all of us in Los Angeles on that day. That was terrible. Absolutely awful.
Tom, is there any truth to the fact that, like, you know, kids in St. Louis, they mimic David Freese, you know, his hand clap when he slides into third base. Do kids of a certain age in Los Angeles mimic Pedro Guerrero's spiking of his glove?
You would have to be my age or a few years younger, but that certainly is one of those indelible moments. And the name Tom Niedenfuhr lives on for that reason too. But those were dark days. I prefer to think of the 1977 NLCS with the Phillies and the comeback in Game 3, you know, down 5-3, two outs in the ninth, and Vic Davalio at the plate, and that comeback, which a great, great baseball comeback. And that's
recent too. I mean, really, just happened just yesterday.
Yes,
I have.
I think I came. Go ahead.
Oh no! Go ahead.
I would say I think I came home from school to catch the end of that game. I think it was the afternoon playoff game that day, and so I think I only saw the final few innings of that. But yeah, you know, Greg Luzinski misplaying the ball. That's still part of it. That's still in me.
So do I have time to ask you two gentlemen a question, Mr. Gould?
Oh yeah, you have time, and then I have I want to pull the whole show together.
All right. Well,
is that possible?
Yeah,
yes.
That's a hopeless cause. So this is a question of existential importance, and it is the foundation for some of the greatest regret in my life. Have you ever done the right thing? Like you feel like, okay, I did the right thing in this moment, and then not only regretted it in that moment, but regretted it years later and said, if I could do it again, I would have done the wrong thing. And I ask that because in 2006, and this is bothering me. I don't sleep at night. And this happened in 2006. In 2006, I had made my collegiate hockey team. So this is a hockey and baseball story, which is why I need both of you. And I was the worst one on my team by far. I was the Rudy. I was there for morale. I did not dress for half the games, but I was playing ACHA hockey and loving it. I had tickets to Game 4 of the World Series. Now, I could go to Game 4. And as you remember, Game 4 was rained out. So those who had Game 5 tickets went to the rescheduled Game 4, and my tickets would then become Game 5. The night of the night of Game 5, I should say, the real Game 5, the clinching Game 5, I had a hockey tournament against like the University of Colorado and University of Denver. And I was pretty sure, because it was a big tournament, that I was not going to dress for those games. But I knew the right thing to do would be to show up for my team and not just like not go to those games or say I was sick. So I had the tickets in my hand for Game 5 and I gave them up. And that night I sat through two entire hockey games and didn't play a single shift. And if I could go back, I would not have made that decision. What should I have done?
I remarkably have a similar story. I think, but different circumstance. It doesn't involve sporting events, but it involves trying to make the right decision based on an event. I think you did the right thing. If this means anything, and Tom, please chime in. But I think you did the right thing because you gave your tickets to someone who also appreciated it, and you did the right thing for your team. Like, that's a daily double.
Why do I feel so horrible? I still cry about it.
I mean, I guess because, like, you missed an event. Like, I'll try to tell mine quickly, is And it's probably embarrassing to tell it, but I will. When I was a kid in high school, there was a concert coming to town at Mile High Stadium, and it was Metallica, Guns N' Roses, and Faith No More. And I still like Faith No More. I had Faith No More playing it earlier. I'm not going to apologize for it. But, you know, Metallica live is something special. Guns N' Roses is okay. And then Faith No More, and they were going to play at Mile High Stadium. Well, there was an event, Montreal, I believe it was. St. Louis also had a concert rescheduled and everything like that. So anyway, the concert was canceled, or postponed. It was postponed. It was postponed later on. And when it came back to town on that date, Faith No More was no longer a part of it. A band who I did not like, and also like had some just awful lyrics and stuff. I didn't want to go, but we'd already spent the money. My friend had already spent the money to go with me. And it's happened the same weekend as Order of the Arrow, which is something that you're selected for Boy Scouts. It's for the ordeal. And I had to make the choice as to whether or not I went and tried to get the individual achievement of Boy Scouts, or I did the right thing by my friend and went to the concert that now suddenly didn't have the band that I wanted to see. So did I make the right call? Tom, what call did I make?
You would have gone to the Boy Scout thing.
I went to the concert because it was for a family. Because we had spent a lot of money and saved up a lot of money to go. And I went with my friend, and I thought, well, that concert's going to be there once.
Yeah.
And that time to spend with a friend is going to be there once before we graduate and go separate directions. And maybe that Boy Scout opportunity will come back around again. It never did. It never did. Mm-hmm. But so it's kind of parallel, right, Amy? And
it is, but
you made the better call.
I think you made the better call.
Yeah, I don't want to get schmaltzy on this, but Derek very big on valuing friendship, and I should have considered that. Few people I know value friendship as much as Derek does.
Well, that's kind of you to say. Yeah.
Well,
I'm still friends with the guy I went with. We're still really close, and I don't know. I wish Faith No More had played in it, but right. All right.
No, mm-hmm. I'm glad you went to the concert because, again, it haunts me. I walked off the ice after that second game. And I had dressed for that game, but I didn't play a single shift. I got off the ice and we walked into the lobby of the rink. It was out in Wentzville. And on the TV, I saw, right as I walked off the ice, after sitting through two entire hockey games, I saw Wainwright being just, everyone was jumping on top of Wainwright. And I got tears in my eyes and then I went home. I think I cried the rest of the night. It's really upsetting to me.
Well, but this sets the stage for, not only did I get to bring up Mile High Stadium, which is where I wanted to end this podcast, but you, with that story and with Tom talking about like what Pedro Guerrero spiking his glove and Ozzie Smith looked like from his angle.
Yeah.
So we're recording this on April 9th, 2020, 27 years ago today, baseball came to Colorado, Major League Baseball came to Colorado. I was one of 80,227 people at Mile High Stadium for that first Rockies game. I got to be there with my dad. I got to be there with his friend, who has since passed away, but is also the godfather of my son, and share it with two of the most important men in my life. That game, because I won the lottery. I paid for those tickets as a kid and got to go. And you know, this is what baseball does, right? It gives us indelible memories, like you guys both described, emotional, you know, maybe even like emotions about missing an indelible memory, like Amy described, or a community coming together for baseball finally coming to our community, like it did, you know, 27 years ago today there at Mile High Stadium. Is that, and that's where I wanted to close this, is that why bringing baseball or hockey or professional sports back by any means necessary becomes so important? Is that why it's so important, Tom? Because even a creative playoff contest or even baseball under a bubble is some way, somehow, to connect people through these shared moments and memories, even if they're only happened through a screen.
Yeah, there's some kid right now, so, you know, somewhere in this country, and there are probably thousands and tens of thousands of them who could have that moment sometime during whatever happens in this baseball season, whether it's if they get to go to games or watching a game on television or watching it in some different location than they normally would, that those memories will happen. And, you know, whatever boost you get, whether happiness, you know, whether, you know, you get your Vic D'Avelio drag bunt and that will become your moment. Those moments will happen, even if the games don't mean as much, if it's not the World Series like we would like to have it, you will have those moments because they always happen. They find us and they're always there. So I think those things will happen, and it will happen if there's any kind of NHL the rest of the way. There are plays and players will do things that will, you know, excite the populace and excite kids of the right age that will, you know, take those with them.
Yeah.
Does it mean as much, Amy, if it's an empty ballpark or an empty rink?
You know, I don't know. I think, you know, because that fan involvement is such a big part of it. But what I do know is that there is something sacrosanct about sports. I know people say, well, it's just a game. Well, in some ways it's a game, but in some ways it's so much more than that. And the reason we need those games, you know, why people are longing to bring baseball back, for instance, because we were made for stories. You know, humans were made for stories, and what sports gives us is a story. Every night you have the hero, the villain, the conflict, the resolution. You know, it fills that human desire to see the good guy win, to see right win. And if it doesn't work out, there's always hope, because, like, oh, well, we've got another game tomorrow. So I do think sports really do kind of fill the spirit and our hope giving. And even if it's not a perfect scenario, maybe a aberration of a, you know, just a different version of a sport is better than none, because you still get a story out of it.
That's really well said, Amy. Thank you guys so much. This has been a pleasure talking with you guys. I've never had the pleasure of doing so at the rink. Tom and I have had many conversations over popcorn at hockey rinks, but Amy, it's been nice to meet you through this podcast and have this conversation. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And, you know, while we're doing a podcast, we hope to get Flotsam and Jetsam out there as a podcast once things calm down, and then people can enjoy the bizarreness of Amy and I talking about strange things. But thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. We never did get to a Flotsam and Jetsam fact. Tom, do you have one?
Gosh. One thing we talked about, and I don't know that we got on the air because when baseball got canceled, but we had Pesapallo, which is Finnish baseball, which is, if you've ever seen Finnish baseball, it's bizarre. I mean, you know, in Finnish baseball, it's as though someone took the baseball rule book and, like, had, you know, lost 40 or 50 pages and just kind of made up what they thought went in there. It's, you know, it's like, okay, here, or it's like they were trying to avoid the copyright violation, and you want to be able to say, no, this is different. This is not baseball. This is entirely different. You know, in Finnish baseball, you know, you get a hit and you run to first base, and first base is to the left. First base is where third base is.
Like in Pride of the Yankees.
Yes. And then
Cooper and Pride of the Yankees, yeah, right?
Except they flip the negatives in real life. But then
Finnish baseball all along, Tom.
All along. Who knew? Well, but then it would have been tipped off when he went to second base, because you know where second base is in Finnish baseball?
Sweden.
it's just about. If first base for them is where third base is for us, and for them, second base is where first base is for us. So you then run to the other side of the diamond to go to second base, which then brings us to where third base is, which is neither in Finland nor Sweden nor Norway. Third base is next to first base. So you run then back and forth across the diamond. So
it's
and in sort of in a sense, except it, you're running on an angle. And if you were to hit the ball over the wall on the fly, you know what that would be? It would be a foul ball. The ball has to land in the field of play. Foul territory is all right. And lastly, where the pitcher stands in any idea, Derek, where the pitcher stands in Finnish baseball?
Behind home plate?
Right next to home plate, on the opposite side of home plate from the hitter. So if the batter's right-handed, the pitcher would be, in effect, in the left-handed batter's box. And then pitches by throwing the ball up in the air, and it has to go at least a meter over the batter's head and land on home plate. If it doesn't land on home plate, it's a ball. So you have to throw it effectively straight up, and you only get one ball, only one pitch. If the first pitch doesn't hit home plate, any subsequent pitch that doesn't hit home plate is, you get first base. It's a walk. So
what?
This is Finnish baseball.
Wow.
This is Pesäpallo.
What's it called again?
Pesäpallo.
How does that spell?
P-E-S-A with an umlaut on top. P-A-L-L-O.
The best A's have umlauts, I've always thought.
Yes, they do. And I will say, if you can find video on this, but the coach, they don't use signs like we do in American baseball. In Finnish baseball, the manager or coach has this colored pinwheel with different colored stripes on it, and whichever like color he holds up is where what the batter should do on that play. So he communicates with a colored fan as to instructing the
amazing.
It's sort of like that, yes, but goes the Finnish national pastime of Pesäpallo. So,
all right. Well,
it's, I don't even want to explain how outs work.
When we're done with social distancing, we're going to have to play this in Forest Park. You're going to have to do the play by play. Amy and I can provide color.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Nine players on defense, 12 players on offense. So there you go.
Naturally. How else would you do it?
Yeah.
That's the part that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It is. You have three designated hitters in effect per team. So
yeah. I can
wow. All right, guys. Thank you very much for doing this. Much appreciated. Thanks for giving all this time.
Thanks for having us, Derek. Appreciate it.
A special thanks to Amy Marskors of KMOX and St. Louis Post-Dispatch, hockey writer and Swiss Army knife do everything sports writer Tom Timmerman, for joining the best podcast in baseball. You can find their work, Flotsam and Jetsam, at the KMOX website. That's KMOX.com. And it sounds like they're going to be doing some new podcasts, too, during all this. So look for Flotsam and Jetsam there. Look for Tom Timmerman's coverage of the Blues and everything else at STLtoday.com and in the pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can find the best podcast in baseball and all of the Cardinals coverage from Hall of Fame writer Rick Hummel and columnist Ben Fredrickson and Benjamin Hockman at STLtoday.com and at your newsstand in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or on your porch, wherever you get your St. Louis Post-Dispatch delivered. The best podcast in baseball is also available anywhere you get your podcasts. We're available on iTunes, where you can listen to individual episodes, download individual episodes, and subscribe to the podcast. It's subscriptions that make the sponsorship possible, and it's sponsorships that make this weekly podcast available, even during this time when there isn't any sports. So thank you for continuing to listen. Thank you for continuing to download. And thank you for rating and reviewing the best podcast in baseball there on iTunes. Let me tell you one last time about our sponsor, Closet by Design. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly by Closets by Design. Get organized with Closet by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. For the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the best podcast in baseball, I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon. Oh, but wait, hold on. You're going to want to stay put and hear Tom Timmerman on an Icelandic film festival. Just a little bit more Flotsam and Jetsam from Tom Timmerman and Amy Marskors.
Thank Thank you.
So there's some Flotsam and Jetsam for you. So that's kind of what we talk about on Flotsam and Jetsam.
And occasionally Abraham Lincoln and the Dakotas.
Like Dakota Hudson?
Nope. Like
no, North why Dakota. We have two Dakotas?
The Cardinals only have one, and they're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but you know, America could we have had we America might well have been fine with one Dakota as well. It would be a big state, but population wise, still you know, we'd still be down among the low ones. So
it'll always be.
And a nice talk about Benedict Arnold.
Yeah.
Time.
Oh yeah, just like the idea of time.
Why time began in 1883?
Yeah.
Wait. Time. T-H-Y-M-E or time. T-I-M-E.
No. T-I-M-E.
T-I-M-E.
Time.
I'm super jealous of these conversations. I just talk about baseball.
Oh, these conversations. Tom Timmerman is a Renaissance man. And my favorite part of like covering the Blues was just the not hockey stuff that Tom would say in the locker room while we were waiting for guys to show up. Like we'd be standing there and they're like, who's going to speak? Oh, Tarasenko and Steen. So we're staying in the locker room. And then Tom would turn to me and he'd be like, so I went to this Icelandic film festival. He's like, and
.com/. Is the name of the movie.
And the lead actor died during the filming of the movie, but they didn't want to refilm anything. So you're watching this film and then it just takes a hard left turn about halfway through.
Hey, so it's like Finnish baseball.
Yes.
Effectively. Something about when you get to northern climes that things happen differently.
You turn hard left. It's the answer for everything.
Yep.
How do you play baseball? Hard left.
Hard left.
How do we finish the movie when the lead actor dies? Hard left turn.
Yep. Yep.